Yo, sounds like not Simo and I. Not doing Christy Bummer.
Everybody.
So, like, you were doing a movie that I think it made a bit of a cliche pick, but really, I'm really fascinated by this movie and I cannot help not picking this. I think Vertigo is the other Hitchcock movie that we've spoken about on this podcast, but And even though if that might be what I feel is his most acclaimed movie, I feel like Psycho is undeniably his most well-known and popular movie.
I agree, and a lot of people are familiar with Psycho from, if you've done the Universal Studios tram tour, stop on there is by the Psycho House. So I think people are familiar with it from that. In one aspect, anyway.
Yeah, I remember doing the tour, like, several years before I even saw the movie Psycho, but even, like, that ingrained itself into my memory. Just, like, the appearance of the sinister motel and then the house itself. And speaking of which, we saw what was actually a 6.5-minute trailer for this movie, and the trailer doesn't even include a single shot taken from the movie itself. Instead, it has Alfred Hitchcock himself kicking the audience on a bit of a tour of the motel and then the house. And I think it's a really clever trailer because he starts to describe details of the movie, but then he stops himself right before he gives too much away. Like, at one point, he points to, like, a picture on the wall and he says, "Now, this picture has great significance because," and then he says, "Well, let's go over to cabin number 3 or something like that. So it's really great at intriguing the audience without actually giving too much away. And one other interesting thing that presented itself at the end of the trailer was the text, "The picture you must see at the beginning."
Yeah, what did they mean by that?
So one of the very kind of unique things about Psycho was, so, like, back in, I guess, like, old cinema, quote unquote, movie theaters didn't have, like, any time schedules. A movie would be playing in, like, theater 3, mm-hmm. for example, and, like, once it ended, it would just start over again. So, you would go into the theater when you, like, buy your ticket and arrived at the theater, and you would just have to wait for the movie to end and then start up again to, like, actually start paying attention. The reason they did this was because they felt that they could generate a higher profit if they had more showings, showings of a movie in the day. And if they had, like, a... So, yeah, I think that having, like, a schedule just didn't occur to them for a while.
But what if you go into the theater and you catch the end of the movie before you see the beginning?
That's, I think, why Hitchcock wanted... Kind of was one of the first people to revolutionize this with this movie, Psycho. I've seen, like, photographs and videos of, like, movie theaters from 1960 as the movie was opening, and there were these posters, or I should say these cardboard cutouts of Hitchcock himself in the theater lobby, and has these, like, this caption of him saying, "Psycho is a movie that you will not be admitted to until the next showing. The next showing starts at," and then there's, like, this, I guess, like, blackboard part of it, mm-hmm. where the people who were running theater could write 4:30. And the movie theaters were really kind of unsure about this. But then, because it was just a concept that was, I guess, really alien at the time, but then they ended up really enjoying it because it created really great publicity, having these really long lines of people waiting at the theater to, like, wait for the next showing of the movie to start.
I could see that.
Yeah. This is a movie that I've seen, I think, either once or twice now. I remember the beginning and endings fairly well, but the middle part not so much, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the movie again.
Before we start, great. Did you want to share with the audience what you went saw today? We may look for the same movie.
Yeah, so today I actually visited the Academy Museum. Yeah, and that's free. For example, I saw the kind of $500,000, so less than a million. And this was his top time to be shot in white. This was pretty good to shoot this movie. So it basically had the budget of like a kind of a lavish TV movie. And I think, as you brought up, there were he kind of also implied a lot of things as opposed to explicitly showing them. I think one interesting thing part is how the toilet, which is kind of teased in the trailer, is in the movie. Basically, in the movie, Marion does some calculations to see how much money was she spent at the hotel and how much of the money that she still has left. And then she rips up the paper with the calculations and then tries to flush it down the toilet. And then it's later revealed that it actually didn't flush all the way, and it was used as evidence by her sister that Marion was actually at the motel. And what's interesting about that is that was the first time that a toilet was shown in a mainstream movie or TV. Because a toilet was, I guess, just seen as too private or risque. But I'm sure that I think Hitchcock convinced the censorship board that could be used because it was really essential to the plot, because it left the hint for her sister to kind of confirm that she had stayed there. Another way in which something was implied was how Norman removes this painting in his motel office and then peeps through a hole that the painting was concealing to kind of spy on Marion as she undresses for the shower. Apparently, this was something that I had read when I visited the Academy Museum, and it showed kind of a letter from the censorship board to Hitchcock. But one of the things that was implied was it was implied with the cutting that Norman Bates saw Marion fully undress and then go in the shower. But then in the movie, it's shown that he sees her probably remove the shirt, but not her like frontal side, and he's shown to put the painting back in its place, and then walks back to his house before she fully undresses. So yeah, that was another interesting, I guess, thing that I found out about at that museum. I think another really defining aspect to this movie is the soundtrack. It's definitely not typical. Or a lot of it isn't really typical music. I think what's most memorable is kind of the like those offbeat what sound like kind of offbeat violins during the murder sequences. Kind of like very sharp, kind of like it mimics kind of the motion of the knife kind of coming down. It's very staccato, I guess. And what's interesting is that Hitchcock originally wanted the shower scene to have no music. But then I think Bernard Herrmann, which is actually a name that I'm familiar with without doing research, because he's collaborated on like at least a dozen Hitchcock movies. So he's really, the two have really worked a lot together. Anyway, Bernard Herrmann was convinced that he could really do a good job. So he composed music for that scene and then added it. And then when he showed it to Hitchcock liked it so much that he ended up changing his mind and then leaving it into the movie. And I think that was a good decision too, because without the music, I think the scene would have actually been made too brutal. Even though music is supposed to kind of intensify the emotions, I think this made it, I guess, seem more cinematic. And I think it would have actually been harder to watch if it was just like Marion being like murdered or stabbed to death without any music accompaniment.
I agree with that.
So we've already discussed the murders and how you were kind of surprised how at the beginning of the movie, the movie didn't go in the direction he thought it would, and it instead started with Marion stealing this money. And I guess to kind of give that more depth and really paint what this movie is about or how it's presented. So Marion is kind of depicted as this innocent, I don't remember what her job is, but just like working class lady who wants to, he's kind of frustrated with her boyfriend for not really taking things to the next step. So then she steals some money when she gets the opportunity, and she plans to visit her boyfriend with the money. I think he also implies that their lack of finances
Yeah.
is really the issue to their
I think
relationship.
he wanted to get married to her, but he was in debt, so she didn't want to marry him.
Yeah. So then
So she steals money.
she steals the money, and then she a policeman grows kind of suspicious of her, so then he kind of stalks her until she switches her car for another one, in a very suspenseful scene from The Master of Suspense. Of course, that is Hitchcock's kind of nickname. And then she finally, about halfway through the movie, no, I mean, a half hour through the movie, ends up at the Bates Motel, who's kind of run by Norman Bates. And he explains that the motel doesn't really get any visitors because since a new highway opened. So there are 12 cabins and 12 vacancies, as he words it, and it's only run solely by him and his mother.
Yeah, and their house is right up the hill from the hotel.
Yeah, that's right. And his mother is we've already talked about the murder of Marion, and it turns out that, I mean, it appears that it is the mother that's doing it, because she's depicted as, and as Norman kind of explains this, she's a very kind of she's very mentally sick, but he doesn't want he like really refuses the idea of putting her somewhere like a mental institution or a madhouse, because of like how he knows that people are how poorly tr people are treated there. So she's very kind of abusive towards she's I guess very overprotective of her son. And when she suspects that he's falling for Marion, then that's when she murders her. And
Just to point out too, we never really see the mother in the movie, do we? We don't like we hear her voice a lot
yeah,
from in the
her I
house,
think
but we
her the
never.
way she looks, she's never fully revealed
Right.
in until the end of the movie. We kind of see glimpses of her though, like in the
In
shadows,
the
like the shower
window.
scene. But yeah, her face is not very well lit. Yeah, her appearance is kind of very secretive. And I think at this point, because like you want to discuss at least a little bit of this, we will probably take this much further into spoilers.
Yeah, so if you're gonna watch the movie, maybe break it and then come back after you've seen the movie, because we're gonna give a few
Yeah,
more things of it.
but great movie. I highly recommend it if you are leaving
Yes.
now. So, of course, it turns out that the big twist that Hitchcock was hiding is that Norman Bates' mother is dead. He was actually the one who. Well, basically, what happened was that he got jealous when she kind of fell for another man and felt that she was taking her attention off of him and then more towards her new lover. So then he actually poisons both of them, and then he becomes traumatized at just the whole incident. So he unburies her 2 months after she had been buried, and then he with her corpse, he kind of creepily imagines having these conversations with her, and then that develops to like wearing her old clothes, and then eventually d developing a multiple personality disorder. So while in like the persona of his mother, he was the one who was murdering these victims the whole time, and then he would just switch back and forth between his own persona and then the persona of his mother's.
Yeah, his mother kind of took over his personality.
Yeah, and then after the scene, that's like the penultimate scene that whole revelation takes place in. And then after that is the final scene, which is where they're, I guess, at like the county jail or yeah, jail. And then they have that scene, a scene where they kind of explain what kind of how well multiple personality disorder is and how Norman Bates was affected by it. I guess another interesting fact I learned somehow was that Hitchcock actually tried to have someone buy up all the copies of this novel that they could find, because he wanted There to be less books, copies of the book in circulation, so that people wouldn't be reading the book in anticipation for this movie.
Oh,
That's
I see.
because he did not want people to know how this movie ends. And I believe that I actually had read the book after I saw the movie, and I probably, it's kind of rare for me to think this way, but I probably preferred to have seen the movie before reading the book, because I think this is a story that is really, I guess, strengthened by by visually seeing it. That's interesting because the book, this is something else I was reminded by when visiting the Academy Museum, because the book was turned to the pages with the shower scene. In the book, Marion is actually decapitated in the shower scene.
Oh.
So in some ways, the book is like, in terms of its details, it's actually more gruesome than the movie. But yeah, I think the movie still manages to leave like a much deeper kind of imprint in the imagination, because of course it is a visual medium. And again, bringing it back to that final scene with the courthouse. Of course, this movie, needless to say, it's like really critically acclaimed as one of the greatest movies ever made, and one of the first slasher films. However, one thing that that keeps coming up whenever I read critics' reviews of this movie is that they think that that courthouse scene is the one scene from this movie that could be cut. I think when I read what the reasoning is, to them, it just feels like a momentum killer. It's just exposition. And yeah, it's just kind of a slow burner after the really exciting scene that happens before that. What's your opinion of that final scene?
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of it just changed the tone quickly. But I wanted to jump kind of, do you remember the very final, I believe it was the final scene when Norman's image, and then didn't we see his, is that a
Yeah,
spoiler? But I
maybe
think
for
it's a
really
good thing
delve
to
into
point out, because you
spoilers,
really have to
but
look for it to see it.
that's all right. Like the very final scene
Yeah.
has, well, be the courthouse is the final scene, but like the very endings of that scene is kind of Bates in his prison cell, and then like he kind of, and then there's like the narration done by the mother's side of him, and then he smirks, and then it fades to Marion's car being pulled towed out of
Swamp.
the swamp, and then but kind of right as that fade occurs between Bates like beginning to smirk and then the car being towed out, very briefly it shows the skull of the mother's corpse kind of being imposed over his face.
Yeah, you really have to look. I had to kind of rewind it and look again to really see it. But keep an eye out for that. It's pretty cool how they did that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, a thing that I think could easily be lost because it just happened very briefly.
Yeah, and one more thing I'd like to point out, kind of near the beginning of the movie that you pointed out, is Hitchcock's daughter is in the
Yeah, that's
film, isn't
right.
she?
Yeah, of course, it has a signature cameo a few minutes into the movie. Hitchcock actually wanted to have his cameos very early into his movies because he didn't want audiences to be distracted throughout the movie trying to find his cameo. And I think that is, I do feel that convenience. It's very nice to like find him very early in the movie and then like being able to focus quickly on the plot. I think it could also be kind of distracting being really invested in the plot of the movie and then suddenly having Hitchcock kind of walk by. I think that would kind of come off as a bit arrogant, like, oh, remember, I'm the one who's making this movie happen. So it's really fun. It's always fun seeing his cameos in the early in the movie. As I mentioned, his daughter plays a small role in this movie. This is actually her third and final time being in one of her dad's movies. Interestingly enough, she did have a main, kind of one of the starring roles in one of the episodes of his TV show. His TV show, the episodes of his TV show open and end in him, in the camera being really direct right at Hitchcock himself as he, like, kind of introduces what the story is about and it gives some humorous remarks. And then at the end, When the story finishes, he kind of gives some final statements about like kind of tying up all the loose ends. And what is really funny about kind of the ending of that episode in which he stars in it is how he says something like, "Oh, and by the way, I thought that the actress, that main lead actress, is very charming, don't you?" So I thought that was kind of a very funny, like, inside joke. And despite how brief her I guess presence is in this movie, it was there's something really nice about seeing two members of the Hitchcock family in it. And yeah, her acting for what small of a part it was good.
Absolutely.
I think that's basically all I have. Do you have anything else you want to add or share?
No, I highly recommend it. I feel like I could watch it again and again, find different things throughout the movie that I didn't notice the viewing before, and I give it 10 out of 10.
Yeah, this, I think, as previously mentioned in a pre-show, this was our second time reviewing a Hitchcock movie, the first being Vertigo. And I have to say, I really love Vertigo when I saw it. I think it really belongs as one of my favorite movies of all time. And even though I had seen a lot of other critically acclaimed Hitchcock movies, I wasn't sure that none of them really reached that place where Vertigo landed. But I think this movie actually comes really close. And yeah, I think this may be either my second or nearly my first favorite Hitchcock movie of all time. And he's done over 50 movies actually, so that's saying a lot. Yeah, I really enjoy watching this again. And picking up things that I really forgot about my first or second time seeing it. Strong recommend. It's also obviously 10 out of 10 for me. And yeah, I look forward to discussing our next feature in whether that's in a week or a ne or 2 weeks from now.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, bye everyone.
Bye-bye.